Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jonathan Liss, and I've been closely tracking the ETF space for more than 13 years through a variety of roles here at SeekingAlpha.com. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investing goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of the individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the morning of Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Today's guest is Ryan McCormick, QQQ Equity Product Strategist at Invesco. Prior to joining Invesco, Ryan was an ETF specialist at Oppenheimer Funds, working specifically with the FA community. Before Oppenheimer Funds, Ryan spent 7 years at Merrill Lynch on the Portfolio Solutions desk, serving as the first point of contact for FAs seeking implementation guidance for ETFs along with market and economic commentary. He earned a BA in economics from Johns Hopkins University. You hopefully remember Ryan from episode 47 of the show, which aired back in June 2020. That show is titled Betting on Innovation, How Much Longer Can the QQQ Continue to Outperform? And it was one of our most popular episodes of all time. If you haven't had a chance to yet, I highly recommend you go back and give it a listen. Anyway, welcome to the show, Ryan. It's a thrill to have you back here again.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's great to be back. And man, a lot has happened here in the past 10 months or so.
Absolutely. But I think one thing that has remained consistent is that the QQQ has continued to outperform over that period. So maybe little periods here and there where maybe there's been some leadership from some of the other benchmark indexes, but certainly the long-term numbers still look really good. Before we get into the conversation, I also wanted to welcome Jason Kapoor, the ETF news editor here at Seeking Alpha. As I mentioned previously, Jason will be taking over the podcast. I must start focusing on other things here at Seeking Alpha, particularly building out our contributor marketplace. And I just know from my preparation time with Jason, he's super plugged into the ETF space. He's going to be really, really great at this. And I think an excellent host for a very long time to come. And of course, I'm still going to be involved with the show behind the scenes. I'll still be doing occasional episodes as well. I definitely can't stay away forever. But anyway, Jason, why don't you tell the listeners a bit about yourself at the outset here so they can start to get to know you?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me, Jonathan. And unfortunately, I don't want to have to take over fully for you, but hopefully we'll be able to get you back over sometimes. But I'm looking forward to hosting some future podcasts, discussing ETFs with our audiences, meeting some new guests. As Jonathan mentioned, I'm working on the news editor team within the exchange traded fund space, but ultimately just looking to meet some new individuals here and get in touch with our audience. So I'm excited about it.
Awesome. So why don't you take it away? Why don't you do the honors in terms of getting things going with Ryan here?
Absolutely. So Ryan, I think the best way to start off this episode would be if you could provide our audience with a bit of a brief introduction about yourself, your background, your role, perhaps a little bit about some of your responsibilities over at Invesco and things of that nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jason. At Invesco, my title is a factor and core equity strategist. Invesco is one of the leaders in terms of the ETF ecosystem and have a number of offerings across, the equity, the thematic or alternative and fixed income world of ETFs. And my task is to represent the Invesco equity side of our ETF offering. I'm the lead strategist for QQQ, as well as the newly launched Innovation Suite, which includes QQQM and our topic for today, QQQJ, And I represent these products out in the field. So whether it be conversations with financial advisors or institutions or participating in media opportunities like this, I'm really kind of the voice of Invesco's equity ETF offerings, as well as I said, the innovation suite. So, you know, beyond that, working on thought leadership content and putting out pieces that discuss and not only kind of what's going on within the funds, but of course, positioning within the marketplace.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for that. So you're the eyes and ears over there.
Sure. So getting into the topic of today's conversation, the Invesco NASDAQ Next Gen 100 ETF, ticker symbol QQQJ. First of all, congrats on the launch of the entire innovation suite, and particularly this fund absolutely just flying out of the gate, picked up over $1 billion in assets under management very, very quickly. And I know also that the person here at Seeking Alpha who does the post-production on these shows, Michael Lipkin, I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, actually reached out to me maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago and said, what's the deal with QQQJ? My advisor said maybe I should be looking into adding that. And I said, you know, looks like a good fund, but we'll have to get Ryan back on the show so he can actually discuss it in detail. So while he's editing the show, he can try to figure out what kind of allocation he wants to QQQJ here also. So I guess let's just start at the top here. What exactly is the concept behind this fund? You've got QQQ, which is obviously one of the biggest exchange-traded funds in the world, which holds the not exactly the 100 largest companies in the NASDAQ. There is a selection committee, but something like that. So what's the concept here with the QQQJ?
Yeah, and I think today is a great day to discuss it because we are celebrating QQQJ's 6-month birthday. So it was launched back on October 13th of 2020, and since then has become Invesco's most successful ETF launch in its history, which, as you had alluded to, we're very proud of and very excited about the interest that's been generated in the fund. But really, I think when you look at that interest, it's something we've been hearing about for some time, for the past number of years, where investors really like the idea and the concept and the transparency of QQQ and the NASDAQ 100. You know, there's this appetite to look down in terms of market cap. So getting access to some of the smaller companies that kind of maybe follow a similar direction to companies that we've seen within QQQ. So to refresh, QQQ tracks the NASDAQ 100 index, which is made up of the 100 largest companies listed on the NASDAQ exchange ex financials. QQQJ is effectively the 100 just below that. We like to affectionately say that the QQQJ stands for junior. So it's essentially numbers 101 through 200 listed on the NASDAQ exchange ex financials. So it follows kind of a very similar framework of the NASDAQ 100 and a story that's you know, most folks find very easy to understand and digest. And I think as you start to look at the exposures within QQQJ, it looks very similar to QQQ in the NASDAQ 100. You've got a pretty reasonable exposure to technology, exposure to consumer discretionary and communication services, much like what you would see in QQQ. Kind of the one differentiator, I think, within it is the healthcare sector, which is the second largest within QQQJ. It makes up a smaller percentage when you look at it against the QQQ. But you know, traditionally, what you're looking at here is still a portfolio of 100 kind of growth leaning stocks that are just a little bit smaller in market cap as you compare it to something like QQQ.
So Ryan, kind of just building off your point right there, where do you see QQQJ fit into an investor's portfolio? Should it be looked at more as a core strategy, more of a satellite strategy, potentially both? What would be your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think potentially both, and I think it probably will be on a client by client or strategy by strategy basis. I like to say that QQQJ effectively kind of straddles the line between mid cap and large cap. So we've been seeing folks use it and carve out specifically a spot within their mid cap growth allocation. You know, beyond that, I think we've been seeing a lot of folks using it as a complement to something like QQQ. You know, it's QQQ is the fifth largest ETF out there, you know, very widely held. And as you look at the construction of QQQJ, it's really designed to be very complementary to something like QQQ. It has the same rebalance and reconstitution schedule. So there isn't any overlap between the two. And again, kind of keeping with that consistent theme of a similar type methodology, as well as the fact that there is no overlap, it's kind of led people over to use it as a complementary strategy to QQQ. You know, I think beyond that, when you start to look at the world of large cap investing, and what we're starting to see is a reasonable amount of concentration. Meaning, as you look at the top of a lot of large cap strategies, you see the same number of holdings making up a pretty large percentage of the allocation. In essence, right, you have a lot of these strategies that are kind of rowing the boat in the same direction. So in some cases, you're seeing advisors and investors utilize QQQJ as a diversifier for some of their large cap holdings, right? It continues to give you that growth overweight. As I said, it's sort of straddling the line between mid and large cap, but I think it introduces a somewhat differentiated return profile in that it's not necessarily investing in some of those largest holdings that you're seeing pretty consistently across a lot of large cap strategies out there.
Excellent. And I guess the J for junior really does make sense. I kind of, the way you explained it right there, that it could be, you could look at it as something that you can tag along to the original QQQ in nature. And I guess from your standpoint, you know, what have you seen in terms of, you know, since it's been brought to market, the feedback that investors have had, what are they saying about QQQJ? What are you seeing and thoughts around that?
Yeah. So, you know, clearly, as I had said before, we kind of heard this investor demand building for this type of product for the past number of years. And you know, frankly, the interest that we've seen and the inflows that we've seen may have even exceeded our expectations when it came to that investor demand. Going hand in hand with that, you know, we priced this strategy fairly aggressively with an expense ratio of 15 basis points. And, you know, again, that was with the thought that, you know, this demand that we've been hearing was going to translate into inflows. And what we've seen thus far is just that. So investors, advisors that are utilizing the fund, we've seen pretty widespread adoption, again, because I think they're very comfortable with this idea of using it as a complementary strategy to QQQ and you know, the fact that it's a fairly transparent methodology. To take it a step further, I think, you know, the reason that so many people have been looking at this fund and why that demand was so robust is folks kind of like this idea of gaining access to these NASDAQ listed companies at an earlier stage of their growth cycle. Now, what I mean by that is, you know, what we've seen is this historical kind of progression of mid-cap names listed on NASDAQ rising the ranks, so to speak, up through the NASDAQ Next Generation Index, which is the index that QQQJ tracks, before they graduate, so to speak, into the big leagues or into the older sibling, the NASDAQ 100 or something like a QQQ or QQQM. So companies that would have risen the ranks, so to speak, would have been like Tesla back in 2013 or Netflix in 2010. More recently, companies like Mercado Libre or Splunk. And then, you know, last year we saw a company like DocuSign make the leap. So, you know, I think gaining access to these up and coming type companies that could be the next members of the NASDAQ 100 is an interesting kind of, it's an interesting notion that I think investors really have gravitated towards. And again, I think the inflows that we've seen here have even exceeded our expectations.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just to get into the dynamics of the fund and the underlying index a bit more, investors who are familiar with the NASDAQ 100 index will be familiar with the fact that the way that the constituents are weighted is a little bit strange. There are some modifications there. And I'm just curious if there are similar modifications with the QQQJ, or because its size in terms of the size, its names 101 through 200, you don't have to worry about necessarily having too much top heaviness. So just if you could address the weighting relative to that benchmark QQQ index.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a fantastic point. I don't think there's as many moving parts in the weighting methodology as you might see in the NASDAQ 100. It's pretty cut and dry within QQQJ and NASDAQ Next Gen. We just have a 4% cap on individual holdings. So I think as you look at the life of the fund and the index, we haven't really seen any names approach that 4% number, but that's the capping methodology that's utilized.
And in terms of how that would play out, so let's just say, you know, CrowdStrike top holding right now over 2.3% of the portfolio. Let's say CrowdStrike has total blowout earnings, or, you know, something that really just absolutely makes the underlying share price skyrocket. Is there some kind of mechanism where you would unload shares before the reconstitution and rebalance, before it gets moved up to the QQQ, the NASDAQ 100, or is it just kind of sit there until the end of the year is up?
So a really interesting dynamic there that you bring up. You know, I think as you look at movement between the two indices, and that was something that I had alluded to before, most of that movement is going to take place at the annual reconstitution, which generally is after the third Friday of December. Now, there are scenarios within the NASDAQ 100, let's say, where a name may be kicked out of that index for a handful of reasons.
I remember United Airlines got booted early, if I'm not mistaken, during the pandemic.
exactly right. And so United Airlines is an example where its market cap represented less than 0.10% of overall market cap of the index for two consecutive months. That's an instance that would trigger a deletion. Separately, if ICB were to reclassify, and ICB is industry classification benchmark, you know, essentially the classification of individual securities within the index. If they were to reclassify a stock as a financial stock, that would trigger a deletion from the NASDAQ 100. And at that point, what happens, the NASDAQ looks down to the next eligible kind of participant or next eligible security and brings them into the NASDAQ 100. So that would be sort of an example or a couple of examples of an intra-year movement between the two indices. Now, I do think it's important to note when that happens, you will not see that security replaced in the NASDAQ Next Generation Index. It'll effectively just stay one security lower in terms of numbers, so 99 holdings, again, until the annual reconstitution, where it will be bumped back up to 100. So, you know, for the most part, the movement between the two indices will take place at the annual reconstitution, but there are scenarios in which you could see a company move from NASDAQ Next Generation into the NASDAQ 100 over the course of a year.
Nice. Very, very interesting.
Ryan, I wanted to kind of come at this conversation from a different angle that some of our audience might be thinking of. You know, with yield rising, you know, obviously there's been a buzzing discussion around the idea of rotating to value versus growth and more towards cyclicals and financials and strategies of that nature. You know, my question to you is, how would you approach this point? And do you personally or Invesco see a clear rotation or more of a widening market? And where would QQQJ fall in line? As I know earlier, we discussed that it being in that mid-cap growth range.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the rotation into value has been fairly undeniable, right? We've seen that interest kind of building from the late fall and certainly year to date. And I think initially it took some time for investors to get comfortable with the fact that we were in fact in a recovery. You know, I think when you look historically coming out of a recession, you'll see investors show a preference to value stocks and smaller size stocks as, you know, from a factor perspective, they're the ones that have outperformed coming out of a recession. Now, you know, I think you could continue to see value outperformance for some time here, but, you know, I think we've been kind of calling it a value. Well, I think when you're looking at the value performance, you know, I think the it's likely to be in the short term, short to medium term. I wouldn't be shocked to see us get back and Invesco's kind of equity strategists also kind of lean this way, get back to a lower growth type environment. You know, as we start to progress into this recovery, as comps become harder, as we see the pace of economic growth maybe start to slow down the line. Again, I think that pushes the scales in favor of the more growth leaning names and sectors. But you know, I think when we look broadly at where we are in the cycle, the runway for equities is still pretty long. You know, we do continue to have a fairly accommodative Fed. I mean, we're looking at sort of broad based economic gains across the marketplace, and so I think that does set up a pretty favorable environment for stocks in general. You know, I think the growth versus value debate will continue to rage for as long as stocks are traded. But you know, I think as we look longer term, the positioning of a fund like a QQQJ or even QQQ does make things relatively attractive. You know, the underlying exposure within these funds to not only these sectors, but these names that are kind of at the forefront of the new economy or fourth industrial revolution. I mean, there's a number of adjectives you could use to describe it. You know, when you look at sales growth of certain sectors, you know, it is much more concentrated towards these growth-driven consumer type sectors and securities. And, you know, I think as you look at the holdings again within something like a QQQJ, it is very well positioned to take advantage of some of these structural changes that we're seeing out there in not only the marketplace, but in society as a whole.
Excellent. I appreciate that insight because I know it's been obviously a hot topic. Everyone's saying, is growth dead? Are we going to value? Vice versa. It depends on what side of the coin you're on. But I appreciate that analysis and that feedback.
Yeah. And, you know, I think just to add a little bit, you know, people have been kind of waiting for this value catch up for some time. Right. And, you know, I think in some cases you look at where valuations are in the market and they may appear to be a little bit stretched. You know, it's perfectly healthy for markets or even growth stocks in this example to take a pause. Right. If anything, it maybe allows the E portion of the price to earnings ratio to catch up, particularly in an environment where we could see broad-based economic gains. But, you know, I think really to underscore the point, we're very favorable on stocks here for some time.
Awesome. Another question I had for you was kind of around the idea of what do you think separates QQQJ from, say, other similar ETFs that may be focusing on that mid-cap growth range? And ultimately, why do you think participants... you know, market participants that are out there should be looking at QQQJ versus others, or, you know, essentially, what do you think outlines QQQJ to be different?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's a fairly concentrated basket of these growth leaning securities, right? So you're looking at 100 names. And beyond that, when you look at the type of company that historically has listed on NASDAQ, generally very growth oriented, very forward looking, and it gives you access to these types of companies. I mean, I think to go back to an earlier point, you know, the fact that it does follow the same methodology as the NASDAQ 100, it's fairly transparent. So there's a reason why all these names are in this portfolio, and I think, you know, being able to know exactly why a company is included in the index, you know, it's very helpful in terms of explaining or understanding what you own. So a little bit, likely a little bit more concentrated than some other mid-cap companies. I think beyond that, you look at the utilizing it as this complementary strategy to QQQ. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense. It's uninterrupted access to, you know, in that case, the 200 largest companies listed on the NASDAQ exchange, X Financials. And I think investors broadly are very comfortable with not only those names, but that type of strategy. Beyond that, the kind of gaining access to these companies at an earlier stage of their growth cycle, with this notion of graduation into the older sibling or larger sibling, however you want to describe it, I think has again attracted investors to take a pretty deep look into QQQJ.
Sure. So in terms of what you think separates QQQJ from other similar ETFs out there, funds focus on the mid-cap range. I know you've already gotten into this somewhat, but what do you think it is if you had to say to somebody who maybe was looking to choose just one mid-cap fund, why this would be the direction that they would go?
Yeah, so you know, I think it goes back to our the notion of this being part of the innovation suite. And Jonathan, I know the last time we spoke, we kind of broached the topic of innovation, and it's kind of difficult, right? Because innovation is there's not a predefined metric that you can point to that sort of indicates a company's commitment to innovation. But, you know, much like the older sibling in QQQ or NASDAQ 100, what we found is our companies within QQQJ or the NASDAQ Next Generation Index have a very similar commitment to research and development, much like their companies within QQQ. And as you look at the year 2020, NASDAQ Next Generation companies reinvested 7.1% of sales back into their businesses through R&D. That's significantly more than some of the competing indices out there like the S&P Mid-Cap 400 or Russell Mid-Cap Growth. And beyond that, you know, I think that this helps to fuel exposure to a number of these sort of disruptive themes or disruptive technologies. We talked about the new economy before, and really there's no debating the fact that, you know, our society is changing at a very rapid pace, right? We have all new products, services, ways to do business, ways to interact with one another. And largely that gets lumped into this notion of disruptive technology. We think that the QQQJ company's commitment to this R&D helps to fuel their exposure to a number of these different disrupted themes. With NASDAQ, we work pretty closely with them, obviously, and they work with a company called UNO that analyzes patent filings over various timeframes. And the most recent data, looking at the one-year kind of time horizon from the end of November 2019 through the end of November 2020, you see that over one third of the portfolio of QQQJ filed at least a patent relating to around 24 themes that would be classified as disruptive technology. To put it into perspective, the 2.8% of all patents relating to cloud computing were filed by QQQJ companies. You know, I think when you look at it relative to something like QQQ or the NASDAQ 100, right, because of the size and scope of a lot of these those companies, you'll see much higher percentages in terms of their patent contribution. But, you know, from these up-and-comers, you know, the fact that they are very deeply entrenched in a lot of these disruptive technologies like cloud computing or cybersecurity or big data or 3D graphics, and the list goes on and on. You know, we think that this is directly a result of these companies' commitment to a higher than average research and development spend.
Sure, makes total sense. And then in terms of what you guys may have coming up the pike at Invesco there, so you've now got the largest 200 companies in the NASDAQ covered. Any plans to roll out additional funds in this innovation suite that maybe go further down the size, further down into the size premium to get even smaller companies not included in QQQ or QQQM or QQQJ?
You know, I think we're always looking for new and exciting ideas or an expansion of existing ideas. So, you know, we're always looking at a new and innovative type way to bring investing to the marketplace. So let's just say potentially.
Sure. It makes sense. Yeah. Cause I think last look here, there's a little over 1,000 companies listed on the NASDAQ. So definitely room for more innovation in terms of how to bundle those for investors.
So Ryan, we could obviously be discussing this all day long, and we appreciate your insight to QQQJ, Invesco's opinions in the marketplace. But for individuals out there that are looking to learn more about the space, maybe learning a little bit more about you, where would they be able to go to find some more information?
Sure. So Invesco has an Innovation Suite website. Rather than speaking out the whole address, if you just type into a search engine, Invesco Innovation Suite, I would venture a guess that would be the first result to populate. Beyond that, you can always reference Invesco's Twitter handle, which is @InvescoUS. You can always feel free to follow me or contact me via LinkedIn, just Ryan McCormick, and that will be listed as a factor and core equity strategist at Invesco.
Excellent. And for the listeners out there, we will include the link within the show notes. But I think that kind of brings us to a close with this episode. Want to obviously thank all the listeners out there and Ryan McCormick of Invesco, factor and core equity ETF strategist.
For disclosures, Ryan McCormick is long QQQ. Jonathan Liss is also long QQQ. Jason Kapoor doesn't have positions in any of the funds discussed in today's show. If you've been enjoying Let's Talk ETFs, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. And if you find this podcast useful, please consider leaving a review on one of those platforms so that other investors can discover it. You can also find this podcast on SeekingAlpha.com by typing Let's Talk ETFs into the search bar at the top of the site.